Hey Dhamma friends, hope you can hear me. Actually, we were discussing Kagga Visana Sutta, which is available in the Sutta Nipata in Kuddaka Nikaya. As you know, Kuddaka Nikaya has many books, around 15 books are there. So among them, Sutta Nipata is one of the very ancient and early Buddhist book, and certain suttas are very popular. Say, for example, Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, all are from Sutta Nipata. And here, Kagga Visana Sutta is also from Sutta Nipata. So, it is translated as rhinoceros horn. So, it represents some steadiness and again the kind of seclusion, because it is not horn with many others, but it's a single horn. And again, a very steady, strong horn. So therefore, the kind of practitioner's life sometimes is represented with this sort of, what we can say, kind of a parable, where his life is fairly a strong one, steady one. I'm not telling that from the very beginning, but slowly, his mind become further and further steady and strong and quite resilient. So likewise, certain qualities are developing as one developing the path. Now, we were discussing different verses available in this sutta, and around 40 verses are there, and starting with actually number 35, and now we have come to number 56. Now here actually all the verses are attributed to the kind of explanations by Paccheka Buddhas. So this is something commentary is mentioning. So according to the commentary, each and every verse is kind of an explanation given by the Paccheka Buddha for his own enlightenment. So you know, like the Sammasambuddha, Paccheka Buddha also self-enlightened. But only difference is Paccheka Buddha does not establish a order of Sangha, and he can't explain Dhamma in detail so that another person also may recognize it, also may understand it. But on the other hand, the Sammasambuddha established the order of Sangha and again explained in detail the Dhamma, so that many, many people, many, many generations get the benefit. So, and again, the Sangha order, the members of the Sangha order are also with various skills, and they also start to explain Dhamma. So likewise, it's very interesting phenomena available with respect to the Sammasambuddha. Anyway, now these verses are attributed to Paccheka Buddha. And here also, today also, we are coming up with the story of a Paccheka Buddha. One time, one king was there. Almost many verses are coming some same pattern. There was a king called Brahmadatta. So this is the typical way of commentary explaining. So this king was the king for about 20,000 cities. So it seems kind of a large kingdom. So he had a chef. So this chef is very clever. So one day he thought, I got to prepare some very delicious food to the king so that he may reward me. Because you know, chefs are capable of making very delicious food. And now today he has made very delicious food, and he offered it to the king, and he is expecting some sort of a reward because he know very well this is really delicious. King will definitely like it. So definitely he may reward me. So this is the kind of a plan the chef had. Now it was offered to the king, and from the very smell, king was really delighted. And so this chef is so anxious that he may give something even now. But king now continue, and he tasted the food. So as he tasted the food, it is extremely delicious. And it is really fascinating. And the king still didn't tell anything, but you know, the chief is planning, he is dreaming that now the king may reward me, now the king may reward me. But king is thinking differently. He is thinking, really good, I should reward this chef because he has made a really delicious food. But if I reward this chef right now, probably there may be a ill fame about me, thinking, telling that this king is a greedy king. So he has rewarded the chef because he has made delicious food. So now king is thinking differently. So that what happened is, so he continued to eat, and each lump sum that when the king is eating, the chef is having the thought, he may now reward me. But king, on the opposite, thinking, I should not reward right now, because if I reward him, there may be a bad reputation about me. This king is so greedy, and therefore he has rewarded the chef. So he didn't reward. Now, the chef was not happy, and he thought, okay, let me do something on tomorrow. So what he did, he made something not delicious. It's extremely not tasty next day. Now, it is also offered to the king. Now, king started to eat, and he found it's extremely not tasty and can't even eat. Chef should be punished. So now the king is thinking, chef should be punished. But if I punish him, there may be a bad reputation that the king is someone who is very ferocious. So he has punished his royal chef. Therefore, I should not punish him. Now he ate bitter food, rough food. Now the opposite, the chef now is thinking, now today, even though I have made some raw food, this king doesn't feel it even. He didn't even blame me. So I don't need to care about his taste. Don't need to care about preparing him delicious food. Let me save as much as possible from the money given to me without spending much, because this king is not interested of any of these. So I am just using a very little amount of money allocated for me. Let me take as much as possible, save as much as possible for my own use. I am preparing something very minimal for the king. Now this is the chef's plan. Now king going on in this plan. Now king was thinking, I am the king for 20,000 cities. But because of this chef's wrong way of dealing with this situation, or because of his greediness, because of his malicious ideas, I, even though I am the greater king, still I can't even have good food, even like one of my subordinates. My subordinates may have better food than me. Because of this person's wrong behavior, his malicious ideas, I don't even have something good to eat. And he become dispassionate about the whole thing. He understood the defilements operating in that person's mind, and he become disenchanted. He become disgusted about the situation, and he left the palace. He became a monk, and he started to practice, and he became a Paccheka Buddha. Now that Paccheka Buddha has uttered this verse. Now this is according to the commentary. So the verse goes going like this: Nillo lupo nikkuho nippipaso nimmakko niddhanta kasava moho nirasayo sabbaloke bhavitva eko chare kagga visana kappu. So there are very interesting points are highlighted in this verse. Nillolupo. Nillolupo means without greed. Now, you know, greediness is one aspect of tanha, craving. So especially we are using it for, say, food. When you are eating, if you are greedy, so you are eating more and more. And ultimately, you end up with cholesterol, you end up with diabetics, and all sorts of problems are there. Now, the proper way is that you know the amount. You are moderate in eating. You know what are the suitable food for you. What are the suitable food right now if you are suffering from particular, say, ailment? So you should know what are the items suitable for you. But on the other hand, if you are so greedy, you don't consider those, you are eating as much as possible. You are trying to satisfy yourself by eating. So nillo lupo indicates that without greed. Nikkuho, without skimming. Now, typically, this is attributed to monks, but it can attribute to lay people as well. So they are sort of skimming, kind of deceiving nature to the other people. Now, you are behaving like someone which you really don't have such qualities, but you are behaving, you are pretending. So, for example, it is mentioned in the commentary, there are different types of skimming possible. Skimming with respect to requisites and explanation given, like say someone is coming to offer food or offer some sort of requisite like robe, and a monk, even though he wants it as much as possible, he behaves like he doesn't want it. So he behaves like that he is kind of a frugal person that he doesn't need. Then the other person become more and more interested about his behavior and think that he is a really good monk. So they start to offer more and more. Now monks start to accept everything because now many things are available, and he is telling, okay, you guys are carrying all these things for me. I should not refuse them. Then there won't be much merit to you. So even though I don't need, I am accepting everything. So likewise, he is accepting all the different types of requisites. So this is really not that he is frugal or he is really with less wishes, but he's pretending and he's using that as a tactic. On the other hand, related to the postures, so he show that he's like a good meditator, he's a good preacher, he's with a lot of good qualities. So likewise, he can pretend. So the other people might get misled because of that, and they start to offer many things. That is another way of, say, skimming. On the other hand, insinuating talk. So one can tell differently without directly showing oneself. One can indicate that oneself is a good person, is with a lot of, say, achievements, maybe with attainments. So likewise, so like this way, a certain monk can indicate that he is a good person. So the other people start to give many things. But there are certain rules Buddha actually has promulgated in order to avoid this sort of wrong behavior. So skimming is something that one should avoid. So not pretending. One has to show one's real nature. So not skimming, without skimming, indicates that one is showing one's own real nature. It may be still, maybe not perfect, but he's not pretending. And without thirst, nipipasu, without thirst. Now, thirst is a term for craving, tanha. One similar word for tanha is pipasa. Nipipasa means the opposite, free from craving. Now, there are no much craving in particular person who is into the path, developing the path. So he is in a way eradicating craving or removing craving. Therefore, once one become an arahant, it is said, so one has completely eliminated craving. Therefore, he is called tanhakkaya. Tanhakkaya, completely extinct the craving. Completely eradicated, uprooted craving. So nipipaso basically means that one is slowly removing craving, removing the thirst, and one becomes completely quenched the thirst. Now, different types of craving are there. You may know that already different types of craving, like kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. Kama tanha related to different sensual desires in order to satisfy eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body. So different types of corresponding objects are there, sights or forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations. So using which, how to satisfy myself, how to satisfy desires. So this is the sensual desire. On the other hand, one wants to become. Every time I want to become someone, I want to become. So always you are being driven by that sort of a desire. But on the other hand, actually, these are the ambitions that we are being driven. Now, say, for example, while you are like a child, say your teacher or your parents may give you an ambition. Son, daughter, you got to become, say, accountant. You got to become an engineer. You got to become a doctor. You got to become a teacher. So whatever it is. Now, likewise, people are giving such ambition, so we become driven by that ambition. So we are going after that ambition, that hope. But slowly, as one develops the path, Buddha's teaching, so one probably may start to feel, so this having this sort of always kind of an inclination towards next moment, always want to become someone, is some sort of a burden, because you are like a slave. So you are being like a donkey going after a carrot. So I am being going after something. So when I accomplish it, so there's another hope, another ambition. Again, now I am trying hard to achieve it. So suppose that you are successful in it. Now there's another one, a different one. So likewise, the never-ending process, especially with the materialistic gains. So different attributes are there. So more and more you are trying to fulfill them and new form may arise. But the opposite happens when you are developing the path. Suppose you are developing vipassana. Now the thirst is quenched. So that craving has slowly, reduced. Now you feel contented. So one aspect of the Buddha's teaching is this relinquishment or the reduction of craving. And then Buddha mentioned nimmakho, not denigrating. Now this is another very subtle quality. So denigrating. So how one is looking down another person's good quality. Now, actually, when we are developing mindfulness, we can't even understand how these different kinds of qualities come and connect with the path. So that is, in a way, the beauty of the path. At the beginning, you simply start to develop some less amount of bare attention. And as you are developing, as you are continuing it, so many other aspects are coming and joining with the path. Say, for example, when you are developing mindfulness for some time, then probably your mind starts to stay quietly with a selected object. On the other hand, now mind has concentrated. Now mind had collected. Previously, it is not like that. So mindfulness is something else, but now your mind is concentrated. Now this concentration, ekagata, is another new quality, skill that you have developed. And now assume that you are using that skill. Now you are examining that object on which that you have been established mindfulness. Now, when you are doing that, now more and more wisdom going to arise. Now you are understanding, you are investigating this particular phenomena. So accordingly, you may understand, okay, this is not permanent. It's constantly changing. So likewise, certain qualities, certain behaviors of this phenomena are going to be available. Now, as you are continuing, so more and more mind become more clean, we can say, concentrated, mindful, wise. And suppose that you are able to understand things are impermanent. And on top of that, you understood that this impermanent nature is something inherent to all the phenomena. Constantly, every moment, things are rapidly arising and passing away. So this sort of arising and passing away, this sort of a behavior is common to all the phenomena. So whatever the phenomena you consider, you understand, okay, it is constantly subjected to this sort of a process. Now, that is actually mentioned in the other part, sabbaloke nirasayo sabbaloke bhavitva, without wishes for anything in all the world. So this is a very interesting point in with respect to vipassana. So as you know, if you are able to understand the inconstant nature, impermanent nature, so that can be an opening to your practice. That can be an opening to your, say, further development. That is one attribute, the impermanent, anicca. Things are constantly changing. So you understood that very profoundly, deeply, and things are quite impermanent. So since things are very impermanent, very transient, so you can't even recognize it. You can't even distinctly recognize those features, signs. As a result of that, so your mind may let go of the whole thing, and mind can become signless, what we call as animitta, animitta concentration, animitta samadhi, signless concentration. So this is one approach available in the vipassana. But on the other hand, today's verse highlights the other one. That is the appanihisa. So you understand now things are impermanent. So this impermanent nature is very common. So every time, whatever the phenomena is constantly undergoing this impermanence, constantly undergoing this arising and passing away, never remain the same. So even if I wish something in the future, even if I have it, it may subject it to the same behavior. So there is no point of wishing things there. So this is how the person who understood this constant oppression understand. So this whatever the phenomena is oppressed by this arising and passing away. So that is a suffering. Dukkha. So when someone understands dukkha, suffering, profoundly, so he may give up things. He may not desire for things. He may not wish for anything in order to hold, in order to grasp. So that is the opening available in that type of vipassana, what we call as appanihita. So that is highlighted at this level. In this verse, nirasayo sabbaloke bhavitva. So he has no wish, no clinging, no attachment towards anything in the world. Probably you can remember in the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha highlights this again and again. Nacha kinchi loke upadhyati. You are not grasping anything in the world. On the other hand, you have given up things. Now there is no desire to grasp things. Not craving to grasp things. Similarly here, nirasayo, you are free from desires. Sabbaloke bhavitta, to anything in the world. So the mind becomes free through the appanihita vimokka, what you call as the desireless freedom. Freedom from desirelessness. The other one is the sunyata vimokka, what we call as you understand there is nothing substantial. There is no core. There is no inner core. There is no inner essence. There is no self. Therefore, it is empty. So as a result of that, mind become free. That is called emptiness or sunyata. But here in this verse, the prominence is given to the middle. That is the suffering. So since you have understood that all the phenomena, whatever the conditioned phenomena, is obsessed of constantly subjected to this arising and passing away. So as a result of that, so you are, there is no point of desiring. So mind gets released. Now this verse is uttered by the Paccheka Buddha, and not denigrating. So you are not looking down another person. And if someone is having good qualities, so you start to appreciate that good quality, not looking down another person. So not denigrating. Because more and more mind become pure, more and more mind become cleansed. So these kinds of minor, or what we call as upakkilesa, so minor defilements, what we have, may be visible to us. So at the beginning, what we can understand is maybe a lot of craving I am having, maybe angry nature I am having, and maybe I am getting too much involved with certain things, so always mind get entangled. So likewise, certain gross aspects are going to be evident to us. But more and more we are trying to develop the path according to the Buddha's teaching, so we may be able to understand even the subtle defilements. Very minor defilements, we should be able to understand how one is trying to look down another person, how one is not appreciating another person's skills, how you are not respecting another person, always trying to highlight yourself. So likewise, different aspects of our mind defilements may going to be visible to ourselves. One should live alone like a rhinoceros horn. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. So understanding all these, so without greed, without scheming, without thirst, and not denigrating, without stains and delusion blown away, with stains and delusion blown away, the moha, the delusion has blown away, has removed. Now, in other terms, lobha, dosa, moha has blown away. Defilements have blown away. Without wishes for anything in the world, there is nothing to hold, nothing to grasp. Mind is free. Mind is not associating anything, not holding anything, not established on anything. Free. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. One live like a rhinoceros horn. So actually we can understand how deep, in a way, even though the verse is very short, only four sentences, how deep it is. So we can have a lot of insights when we are talking like this. And this is the nature of the most of the Sutta Nipata suttas. So they are mostly verses, and each verse is very, very profound, very, very deep, very philosophical, and mostly subjected to a lot of insights when you are, say, considering the Vipassana approach. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to turn towards the question and answer session.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Currently, there are 8 questions. Just before that, just a small announcement. If you're a newcomer or haven't come to this program before, you can sign up to our mailing list. I'll put our email address in the chat just after this question. You can send us an email and we'll add you to the list. Question number one, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, day by day, I started feeling kala kirima in everything I am experiencing. There is nothing wrong in my life. My life is going perfect. I have a decent job and a house to live and space to practice. However, recently I have been feeling kala kirima a lot. Like, what's the point of all this? There are so many times the idea of becoming a monk has come to my mind. And even now, sometimes I don't know whether the mind is tricking me to find an instance where I will not have kala kirima. And I wonder, the idea of becoming a monk is one of that. I don't know, Bhante. Your advice is much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this can happen. So the renunciative thoughts to giving up things, not interested of anything. So this can happen. So we have to carefully handle it. So even today we discussed the desirelessness. where, say, you are continuing your path, you are practicing really well. So the practice may show that things are not permanent. So things are constantly changing. So there is no point of wishing them. True. So as a result of that, the kalakirima, the dispassion or disenchantment, and even gross level is that disgust nature, so may happen, but you have to tackle it carefully. So just continue the practice. That is the important thing, and allow the mind to let go of things. And you don't need to really grasp things. Now, you see, suppose you are holding a cup of water, and you don't need to constantly hold it. You can keep it on the table. And if you are thirsty, you can drink a little bit of water and you can again keep it aside. So, how to keep the mind free from grasping even while engaged with daily activities? So there's some sort of a thing that we can look at. Say, Buddha did not expect everyone to become monks, but Buddha seems like given a path or shown the path, even while lay people, you can practice. So that is why, I mean, there are many practitioners in the lay life, even during the Buddha's time. So they have led a kind of materialistic life in a way. I'm not telling that fully, say, obsessed kind of materialistic, but they have led a wealthy life. Now, say, for example, certain kings, say King Bimbisara, he being a Sotapan. Now, King Mahanama, he being a Sakadagama. Then Vishakha, she being a Sotapan. Then Bandula Mallika, she being a housewife of the minister, kind of a commander, major, and she's an Anagami, not returned. So likewise, there are many, many examples available. So they have led a lay life while engaged in day-to-day activities, but still attained. Still they were able to accomplish their wish in the sense their liberation. So how to make some sort of a balance? So that is the kind of a challenging situation. So it is true that you are the path is leading towards disenchantment, path is leading towards dispassion, is true. Definitely it has to. Now, can't you live without grasping? Is it a must to grasp? So this is something that we can ask from ourselves. So why can't I keep the, say, water bottle or water cup on the table without holding it? Similarly, why can't I keep away different problems or any kind of desires, keep away things from the mind and lead a very comfortable, lighter, spacious, feeling at ease so that and relaxed, so that kind of manner. So this is something that we have to learn. Therefore, allow the practice to grow and to develop certain qualities in the mind. And as a result of that, time to time, allow the mind to get free. So as we discussed today, so when you understand there is no point of desiring things, there is no point of grasping things, so so if it happens deeply and during the practice, if it happens, then all the grasping has to renunciate or relinquish at least for a temporary period. Then mind become free, temporary, maybe 1 minute, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. So then you can say, okay, the mind has become free, not grasping anything, not associating anything, but for a short period. So more and more you develop such kind of a practice, so you start to understand another way of living, say another domain of your mind. So far mind is constantly associating things, grasping things, holding things, but now there's a new paradigm shift happen. And now you are understanding, okay, there is a way of keeping the mind free from grasping, not holding things, even though it is short. Now, slowly, slowly, you are expanding. Now, you are able to maintain that for 15 minutes, able to maintain that for half an hour, able to maintain that for 45 minutes. So, likewise, when you are maximizing it, so it becomes registered in the mind and you are now very sure, okay, mind is capable of not grasping. Mind is capable of not associating anything, not holding anything. Maintain its own freedom while being a layman. So that is the important thing. You don't need to really, I mean, I am not discouraging being a monk. I am a monk. So I am not discouraging that, but it is not the main thing, by the way. Main thing is that how you are continuing your practice and allowing the, say, practice to evolve and to the qualities to evolve in the mind, and let the Dhamma operate in your mind. So if you are able to do that, say, then some sort of a balance may develop in the mind. So some typical example I give is that kind of a tortoise. Say, assume that there is a tortoise on the water. He has never come to the land. Suppose now you see this tortoise and you say, bring this tortoise to the land, and he may get shocked because he has never been on the land. So he may immediately jump to water. But you are so confident that tortoise has the ability to live either in the land or on the water. So again, assume that you are bringing it back to the land. Now he may be still shocked, but maybe, say, living only another moment. So likewise, if he is trained to live on the land, so then one day the tortoise may understand, okay, land is also a possible way of living. But if necessary, I can go to the water as well. So similarly, the practitioner may have such kind of a life. So if necessary, he can live in the emptiness, not grasping anything. But on the other hand, he may use all the conventions, all the household things for the betterment of his own and for the others, or for the others' welfare. That's it. So therefore, so that kind of a balanced attitude may have to develop in our minds. So then you can actually live smoothly. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, this is a Dhamma question. Would you please be able to explain how a sanya becomes chetana and then the chetana becomes the? For example, if I take sanya as self view or person view or I, does this mean from the very first day the self view sanya was perceived with ignorance, I have contemplated over and over to generating thoughts, meaning chetana? Is this how it happened, Bhante? When I completely go to stillness, there is a sense of self in the bottom, like self-view sanya, even without boundaries. Would this be similar to the very first perceived sanya of the self? Much merits and appreciation with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, these are very subtle points. Actually, at the beginning, what we may be removing, not encouraging, is the ditti. That is the strong grasping, strong holding that I am a person, I am so and so, this body belongs to me, this body is I, but this body is myself. So that type of wrong, strong, gross kind of belief is the one we may be penetrating. But still thinking may going on, even though it hasn't come to a kind of an obsession, not come to a kind of a fixation, but the thinking may still going on, still making a self. Preparing a self. So that also has to be recognized. And more we recognize it, then we are not promoting that making a self, creating a self, claiming a self. Then thoughts may become shorter and shorter. So as I used to tell, say you were writing novels, but now they have become short stories. Now short stories become essays. Essays now become sentences. Sentences can become short messages, SMS, and that can become words. So likewise, this process has to happen. Practically, it has to happen. then you can come to the very, say, subtle levels. Okay, even at the perception level, as you have mentioned, even though mind is not grasping anything, still some deep-rooted sense of self may be available. So that is what mentioned in the one interesting sutta, Khemaka Sutta. So Venerable Khemaka is an anagami, non-returner. But he very honestly say, still there is a sense of self is available. So you can understand, I mean, we are practicing true, but the deeper sense of self is still available, even at the level of anagami. So I am not an anagami. I don't think that any of you are an anagami. So you definitely, and I definitely have this sense of I can't help. So this is why what is called asmimana. Asmimana, I don't know the exact English translation. We generally call it as conceit, the sense of I, myself. So it is there. But it only will be eliminated when one become an arahant. So therefore, it's a long path. So don't worry. Don't think too much. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 9. General question. Bhante, what does it mean by sanyojana sansaradang with metta?
Sorry, can you repeat the
What does it mean by sanyojana? I don't know this second word. Sansaradang with metta. That's it.
Sanyojana, I can answer, but I don't know the other.
I'll put it in the chat what it is, what they've written. Okay. I don't know the word, actually.
Okay. So, sanyojana is typically translated as a fetter that you are being bound to. Sanyojana sansaratam. No, I mean, sansaratam, I can't exactly remember. Now, typically, sanyojana, as you know, that is with which we are being bound to the sansara. We are bound to this continuous existence cycle. Rebirth cycle, on and on, going on and on, because of these clingings, because of these shackles, or because of these bondages. So 10 types of such bondages could be mentioned, like the first 3 are the ones eliminated by the stream winner level, stream entry level. Sakkāditti vichikicchā siddhabbata parāmāsa. Sakkāditti is the gross wrong view, thinking that this body is I, or the different feelings are I, different perceptions are I, different formations are I, thinking is I, something like that. And likewise, 10 fetters are there. I mean, it's a deep subject, so we'll discuss it another day. So likewise, there are 10 fetters explained. So the important thing is, so those gross fetters only we eliminate at the early stages. And then more and more, even the subtle fetters become evident to us. So we become aware of those subtle fetters, like we discussed today. At the beginning, we may only understand, okay, I am having anger. I'm angry. Still, I is there, anger is there. But later you will understand there is anger available. So, I part has dropped to some extent. So, you recognize anger as anger objectively. So, that is a very interesting phenomena, a very interesting point. So, it is not I am angry, but there is anger. So, you are able to look at anger as anger. So, that's a very important turning point in our set practice. So as you continue, the anger now start to reduce. Anger is one gross defilement that easily one can understand. But on the other hand, assume that as we discussed today, some sort of feeling or some sort of tendency to look down another person or to show off ourselves, to higher estimate ourselves. So those are very subtle defilements. And to sort of say, I am a good person, show that I am a good person. So those are very subtle defilements we have. So that we can't recognize unless we remove or at least weaken those gross form of defilements. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so as we develop mindfulness, as we develop concentration, as we develop wisdom, So different subtle levels of sanyojana become more and more evident. So likewise, so we are able to understand even the subtle defilements so that we can slowly eliminate them. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 9. General question. Dear Bhante, would you please explain Arupi Atta Patilabhaya with Metta? That's the end of the question.
Someone has read the book, it seems. So I think Arupi Atta Patilabha comes in the Pottapada Sutta. Arupi Atta Patilabha. Now, you know, if you are practicing Arupa Jhana, so then you are coming to a different way of living temporarily, only for that period. So at that time, you are not associating the gross form of body. So you are not bound to the sensual world. So at that time, the mind is not associating that gross body, gross form, say gross material form. Instead of that, at that time, mind associating immaterial kind of a situation. So there is the gross sanya, gross perceptions, gross signs pertaining to the material, rough, solid world has completely gone. So mind has become somewhat boundless and it doesn't represent any kind of a sign. Now, typically, if you consider your mind, say your mind is always filled up with various material forms. Say you are thinking about your car, you are thinking about your wife, you are thinking about your child, you are thinking about your husband, you are thinking about your job, you are thinking about your president, you are thinking about corona, many, many things. So these are all gross forms of different signs. All are materialistic, pertaining to the gross world, the sensual world. But when you are coming to the Arupa Jhana level, so all this has to be removed in the mind. And now the mind is, to some extent, it is free. But still there is a perception that is called Arupa, immaterial. Say the space is limitless, boundless. Consciousness is boundless. So these are, even though I am telling these things, it's difficult to perceive. I don't know how far you are understanding this. So likewise, the Buddha mentioned, so when one is in that level, so that kind of a mind state does not associate that previous gross form of materiality, rather it is associating a different, very refined, immaterial kind of situation, state. That is called Arupi Atta Patilabha. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 9. This is general question. Dear Bhante, last time you explained that if someone is a Sotapanna, he or she understands the principle of dependent origination or
Iddhapaccheta.
I have no intention of understanding this principle just to be a Sotapanna, but more than happy to understand how it connects to the wonderful practice you have introduced through this program. Regardless of whether we become a Sotapanna or not, this program has provided immense support for me to improve my spiritual life. I have never felt calm, happy, and composed in my life than now after I started this simple practice. Regarding the principle of dependent origination, I presume we will get to know it and understand when we continue and proceed in our practice. Does this relate to the stage which you explained as when one starts observing the rising and cessation of phenomena? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually rising and passing away of phenomena is, we can say, one entry point to understand Paticchasamuppada, Iddhapaccheta. So this is a principle that Buddha mentioned. It's a very profound principle Buddha mentioned, as I am showing in the screen. The noble disciple attends closely and carefully to dependent origination. So the principle is this. Because of this, or when this exists, that exists. With the arising of this, that also arises. When this does not exist, that does not exist. With the cessation of this, that also ceases. So basically, it shows some sort of a dependency. When something is dependent on another thing. So this can only exist if the other one is existing. So with the arising of this, this also come into being. So likewise, so the examples are, so you may start to understand during the practice, say for example, your foot is touching the ground. Just before touching the ground, you don't feel it much because it is on floating on the sky. But when it is touching, when your foot is touching the ground, now you feel. So therefore, this touching is a condition for the feeling to arise. Only when touching is available, the feeling may happen. So if there is no touching, there is no feeling. So passapaccaya vedana is one such link that you can easily understand. So you can apply this principle during your walking in order to understand this principle. Actually, the principle is the important thing. So an example is passapaccaya vedana, the contact conditions feeling. So in order for the feeling to arise, contact is a must. Without contact, feeling cannot arise. With the arising of contact, feeling may arise. And if there is no contact, feeling cannot be. And with the cessation of contact, feeling may cease. Okay, I hope you understood. Fine.
Question number, I think it's 6 of 9, general question. Dear Swamin Wanza, last time you answered my question on verbalizing non-self nature, not me, mine, or my soul, when it comes to the phenomena in our sitting observation. If I may summarize, we can start verbalizing this in a suitable manner and eventually words will drop out and become an inherent understanding. I'm confident that I can do this in walking as well. For example, if I can detect specific thoughts or feelings while in the calm, spacious space while walking. However, the challenge will come in day-to-day activities where there is no pre-built concentration or composed mind to conduct this contemplation. How can we step out from anger or lust and contemplate as a third person without getting caught and indulging in them? From 1 to 10 scale, if the anger is less than 5, seems I can do it. And if the situation is bad, I don't have control to look back at it from a third person perspective. With lust, I'm hopeless for anything above 0, though I have a lot of moral fear and shame about it. Sometimes I wonder why there is such a difference. When practicing, I feel like a saint, and during day-to-day life, I become so vulnerable and feel like a demon. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, so you have written it very honestly. It's very interesting. So, I mean, so nothing to worry. I mean, this is how it is happening. So slowly, slowly it may happen. So don't think that I am a saint, even though I am wearing a robe still. So still minds have defilements. So at the beginning, what we do is it's a matter of using the sila, using our precepts. We are trying to control ourselves so that we are being protected and the others are also protected. But now we are going beyond that with the practice, with the meditation. So we understand, okay, still, I mean, even though I behave like a good person, internally there is a kind of a anger. Internally there is boiling. So how to remove that? So that's the real question. So that is where the meditation really helps. The practice really helps. And slowly, slowly we have to continue the practice. Then according to the Buddha, so he mentioned, so this soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya, dukkha domanassanam attangamaya. So all these different kinds of burnings, worries, lamentation, sorrows may slowly reduce. So allow them to slowly reduce. So try to be patient. Then you can have some peaceful mind. Yeah.
Question number, I think it's 7 of 10. General question. Is it a sin if you continue doing something when you are told not to do it? That's the end of the question.
Sorry, can you repeat?
Yeah. Is it a sin if you continue doing something when you are told not to do it? That's it.
So don't know who told you not to do. So probably if your mother tells, son, don't kill animals, and now you are killing animals, okay, then it's a thing. So I like to answer like that. I'm experiencing some rain, Chatu. So give me a second now. Okay, we can continue. We'll see. I mean, if heavy rain starts, I have to bring something. Okay, we'll continue, Chatu.
Okay. Question number 8 of 10. This is mindful sitting. I was able to hear the fan whirring overhead, trees rustling, and the sweeping of a broom and the ticking of a clock. That's the end of the report.
That's the end of the report. I see. Okay, so you are listening, so allow it to happen. Don't get carried away by that sound. Bring your attention back to the body and try to understand what you feel in your body. No need to think, but to feel. So true that now you understood there is sound available. How to bring your attention, collect your attention to the body and see what are the sensations I feel? What are the things that I feel? So is it feeling comfortable? Is it feeling at ease? Is there any touching sensations? Are there any irritations, itches, etc., etc.? So try to recognize. Okay.
Question number 9 of 10. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, I would like to know if there are any nunneries or lady monk monasteries associated with Nisarnamania if a female wants to ordain. If so, how to go about it? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
So many, many people want to become nuns, monks. So no one will be available for us to support. Eh? Okay, actually, there are few nunneries. Actually, they are working some close to us. So one nunnery is called Pirisarana Mihini Arame, located at the Kirindivela, and another one is Asokalena Mehini Arame, available in in Galevela or somewhere. So these are actually two nunneries. So most of them are working very closely. They come to retreats and they follow the teachings. So likewise, some close association is available with them. So those are the things that I can tell you.
Question number 10. This is the last one. General question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I think this is a continuation of my early question. The time when the boundaries are lost in meditation, is that the experience of Arupi Atta Patilabha with metta? It's the end.
It depends, actually. Now, say, for example, if you come through metta, so if suppose you are doing metta meditation, so there also you can lose boundaries. So if you are achieving losing boundaries through metta, we are not telling that it is kind of arupi atta patilabha. We can call it as metta cheto vimutti. Say your mind has become free with using metta. It's also, we can say, kind of arupi atta patilabha, because it is not, but still it's difficult, because still there may be the sign of personality or not personality, sign of materiality may be available. But on the other hand, the arupa jhana is a little different, where, say, you are trying to condition the mind that the space is vast or space is boundless. There is no limit to the space. So it is true, and you are trying to condition the mind, telling again and again, space is boundless, space is boundless, space is boundless. So ultimately, mind get that sign, that boundless sign. So therefore, it's a kind of a conditioning process. So, but on the other hand, in the Vipassana, we go take a different approach. So approach in the Vipassana is still you can approach the boundless, but using a different approach, using wisdom in a way. Say you are holding something, typically. Say you are holding something material. So that particular phenomena which you are holding, which you are grasping, now you are investigating. So what are the, nature? What is the nature of these different phenomena? Is it constant? Is it really likable? Is it possible to hold it forever? Is it behaving as I wish? So likewise, you are continuously watching it as you observe it. So you understand it's constantly changing, constantly subjected to impermanent and oppression with this nature, oppressed by this all inconstant nature, and it is not under my control. So therefore, mind may release it. Mind may let go of it. So now, where is mind going to establish? So if we are able to handle it properly, if it is not established on anything, now also mind become free and boundless. That is through vipassana. So therefore, different approaches are there in order to achieve boundless nature of the mind. So it depends on which approach that you are talking. Yeah.
Bhante, I got a clarification for that. It says, from breathing only goes to no boundary.
From breathing only going to more, no boundary.
Yeah.
No, actually now, breathing will take you some sort of no boundary feeling, but it is not really no boundary. Now, breathing actually take you to some sort of a calmness, but still it has some boundary. So, I mean, you don't need to think too much about this because, you know, Anapanasati meditation typically does not take you to the boundless or the Arupa Jhana. If you want to go to Arupa Jhana, you have to go through Kasina, and using which you can go to Arupa Jhana, or you have to go through Vipassana and you can go to Arupa Jhana. So therefore, don't worry at this moment. So you are talking with respect to your experience. So at that experience, at this level of experience, you are not coming to that level. So don't worry about these things too much and just continue your practice. And it's difficult to, foresee these things just through the theoretical understanding. So if you are trying to do it, it's more confusing. So therefore, just continue your practice, and later, probably with time, these things may become more clear to you.
Bhante, we've actually gone over time, but there's one more question that's come in. Can we take it or?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Question number 11, general question. Dear Bhante, I have recently been feeding different birds. My parents say it can be sometimes dangerous and discourage me to feed the crows. If I continue to do it, will it be a sin? That's the end of the question.
Feeding birds?
Yeah, like birds or crows, something like that.
So, I mean, I don't know why it is wrong, because they are simply giving some food to animals. So it's not a sin. It's a meritorious deed. I mean, you are simply throwing some food to crows, so that's it, no problem.
That is
so do it some wholesome mind. So let this food be available to these helpless animals so that their hunger may go away. So in that way, you are practicing metta, you are practicing generosity, you are practicing compassion. So you are doing a meritorious deed. Yeah.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante. I'd like to wrap up really quickly. First of all, I'd like to thank Bhante for giving up a lot of the advice and knowledge and pass it on to us, as well as we want to pass on our merits and thanks. Also to the people seen and unseen working to make this program work, and also those seen and unseen participating. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.